All right. Tonight, I'm going to tell you the story of Dr. David Livingston. Now, Dr. Livingston, when he was a boy and growing up, he would have heard tales like you have of the continent of Africa. What kind of animals live in Africa? Just shout it out. What do you got? Elephants? Lions? What? Yep. Yes. All sorts of dangerous animals. Panda bears? There's all sorts of dangerous and big animals in Africa. In Africa to them, all right, that's enough animals. We'll talk about more here in a bit. Africa to David, though, was a big, scary, uninhabitable place. People who lived in Africa, Africa's like a gigantic island. People who lived in Africa, they lived on the coast next to the ocean. No one went inside into the interior central Africa because there were two dangerous protectors of Africa, two animals that no one wanted to cross. Do you know what they were? They were the mosquito and the tsetse fly. So you would think it was the lions or the elephants or the rhinoceroses, but it wasn't. It was the mosquito, because the mosquito carried malaria, a disease that would make you very, very sick. And when you're traveling and you're out in the middle of the bush in Africa, and you couldn't get medical aid to you, you didn't have a doctor with you, or you didn't have some way to treat it, you could die out there from it. The tsetse fly was a type of fly that didn't bite humans, but it bit animals. And to get into the interior of Africa, and you were carrying all your supplies, you would load them up on wagons, and there would be a dozen oxen, a dozen cattle that would pull your wagon into the interior of Africa. And if that fly bit your cow would die. And so that means if you were going to go into the center of Africa, you had to go in by foot and carry all of your food, all of the things you needed to take with you. So no one went in there. They called Africa the white man's graveyard. All the Europeans who came there, people who left and went into the center of Africa, died and never came back out. That's what David would have heard about the continent of Africa. And David was a very curious boy who would have been concerned about things like that. He was born in Blantyre, Scotland, and had the most excitement that he would come home at night and tell stories about his travels. Now, his dad didn't travel to Africa. His dad traveled to surrounding villages selling tea. And that, to a boy who had never left his village, seemed like a big deal. His dad would come back and tell stories of the places he had been and the people that he had talked to. David, when he was 10 years old, started working in a cotton mill, and he was a piecer. That means that when there were little threads of cotton that would start fraying and coming apart, he would be under the machine and have to cut them and tie them back together so that they wouldn't cause problems further up in the machinery. And when he showed up, David was unlike all the other little boys that worked there. He would bring a book with him, and he would have it propped up somewhere, and he would read a little sentence and then walk away and then work for a while thinking about that and then come back and try to read as much as he could. One day he brought a Bible, actually, to the place, and he had a new supervisor that didn't know him, and the new supervisor asked and said, "Son, where did you get that Bible?" Because it was a nice Bible. And he knew that David's family wasn't rich enough to afford a nice Bible like that. He knew that David wasn't getting enough money as a piecer to get that kind of Bible. He said, "Where did you get that?" And David said, "I won it." The supervisor said, "How did you win that nice Bible?" He said, "I memorized all of Psalm 119. Now, if you know Psalm 119, that's a long, long chapter in the Bible, the very longest. And the supervisor said, "You did not memorize Psalm 119. And David said, "Yes, I did." And then he went on to start quoting it. And only a couple dozen verses in, the supervisor said, "Okay, enough, enough. I've got to get back to work. I can't listen to you quote all of Psalm 119. And so he went on and he said, "You can bring your books and read as much as you can here in the plant." David was a very studious young boy, and he was a very curious boy who wanted to learn all he could about nature. So when he would go outside, he would look at the bugs, he would look for little decaying skeletons and try to figure out what the animal was that had died. He would track down insects and plants, and he paid attention to that stuff, but his dad was very scared of this because his dad thought that if David tried to pay attention too much to how things had come about in the natural world, that he would stop believing in God. That he would start believing that something else had caused everything to come into being instead of God creating it. And so he was afraid, and he didn't want David to study any science books, but David was so curious. And finally, one day, there was a man, the pastor of their church, read a letter from another pastor who was begging them to train young men to be doctors and send them to other countries, specifically to India, as missionaries, and that those doctors could then take care of the sick people, and as they took care of people who were sick, they could also tell them about Jesus. And so that began to change David's dad's mind, and before long, David said, "Dad, I really want to be a missionary doctor. Is that okay?" And his dad allowed it, and David went to college to become a doctor. Then he applied to the London Missionary Society, so he had to leave to go to a nearby village, and then he left and went all the way to London to go study to be a missionary. And there was some, he had some hard times there. There was a crotchety teacher who didn't really want to help him and was kind of mean to David and didn't like him. And that teacher assigned him one of the tasks that you have to do as a missionary, you have to preach. And so he gave him a preaching opportunity. David memorized his sermon. He went up to the podium. He got up in front of everyone and looked out and saw his teacher and saw all the people who were there, and he forgot everything that he had memorized. This kid who had memorized Psalm 119, mind blanked entirely. And he stood there looking, and they stared at him. He was quiet. And then they stared at him some more, and he stared at them some more, and it got really awkward. And he said, "I'm sorry, everyone. I seem to have forgotten everything that I came to say." And then he walked out the back door and walked off to his home, and he was mortified. He thought, "I'm never going to be a missionary if I can't preach." Thankfully, though, after that professor flunked him, they gave him a second chance. And he came back and he finally was able to preach and able to be sent. But while he was studying, he came across a man who was a missionary in Africa, Mr. Robert Moffat. And they were sitting around talking about Africa, and someone said, "Have you ever been into the dark wilderness of the center of Africa?" And he said, "No, I haven't." He said, "Yeah, it's got to be so empty there." And they were talking about it. He said, "No, it's not empty." He said, "In the morning sun, when I wake up, I can look out over the horizon and see the smoke of thousands of villages of people who have never heard about God, because no one's ever gone that far north." And David knew, that's where I want to go. So a couple years later, after more training and a lot of stuff that happened, he ends up in Africa at Kuruman, the station where Dr. Robert Moffat was a missionary. And he was so anxious to get up north that he talked one of the missionaries who were there with him into going with him on the first expedition into this uncharted, dangerous, uninhabited, supposedly place. And they went back into the bush and kept going further north and further north until they came to a village. And one of the first villages that David was at, he goes there, and their village had just killed a European man, a white man, not too far before David arrived. And this village was scared that David was there to take out revenge on them for killing his friend. But David thought, "I'm supposed to be helping these people, and they're not going to let me help because they're running off into the woods, hiding from me." The chief came out of his tent and said, "I'm not going to run. I'm not scared of you." And he threatened David, and he held a big spear. David thought, "What am I going to do to make these people trust me and to keep this chief from spearing me through?" So you know what he did? He went to his wagon. He grabbed some food. He went to a fire that they had left deserted and it was still burning. He cooked himself a meal. He ate it. He said, "That was good. I'm going to take a nap. And when I wake up, I hope that we're friends." And so he laid down right in the middle of the village and took a nap. And then he woke up an hour and a half later, and all the village people were back, and they were so blown away by this weird European guy who had taken a nap there in their village, and they all wanted to listen to him, and the chief had a dinner with him, and then he was able to tell the people about Jesus and then set up a tent so that he could help some of their medical needs. And he started doing that at every village he would come to. He heard that Dr. Moffat was going to be back in Africa. Dr. Moffat had been on furlough, and he showed up back in Africa. He traveled all the way down to see him, and that's when he first met Dr. Moffat's daughter. Her name was Mary. David Livingston thought, "There's no way I'm going to find someone that I'm going to marry that's going to want to go with me back in the heart of Africa." But here was a young lady who had been born in Africa, who knew the language, knew the difficulties that they were getting into, and he thought, just maybe this girl could be my wife, and I could take her with me on romantic getaways into Central Africa. He, thinking on this, decided to go back up to the mission station that they had started up further north. And so he goes back, and when he gets back, he found out that they had a problem. Lions were eating their sheep. All their little sheep and lambs, the little baby lambs that would go out into the fields, the lions would eat. And they had to take care of them. Well, the problem was that these people didn't know how to hunt lions. They weren't lion hunters. But David had learned from some other people how they hunt lions. And what they do as they get their guys, they walk out in a huge circle around a piece of forest where the lion's in. And they all start walking closer and closer and closer. And then when the lion finally tries to get out, it's like a big game of Red Rover with the lion. When the lion finally tries to get out, they take their spears and they kill the lion as it comes out, comes through, tries to break through the circle. Well, they all have spears. David, though, he's a hunter and he's a European. He's got a rifle. And they're walking and they tighten and the circle tightens and tightens and tightens and tightens. And finally, the lion runs and tries to get out. And the people are scared and they all run away from it, just like I probably would if I were in that line. And so the lion gets out and gets away. And David thought, oh, well, I guess we're not getting the lion today. So he slung the rifle over his shoulder and he started walking home. And then out of the corner of his eye, he saw something move. And it was the tail of that lion sticking up out of the bushes. And he turned, and there, not too far away from him, was the lion crouching, looking directly at David. David pulled his rifle down off his shoulder, and he took aim. He cocked both of the hammers on the gun, and bam! Fired. Hit the lion right in the neck. Boom! David started to reload his weapon. Then he thought he saw something move again. He went to look up, and bam! Oh, right on the ground. The lion attacked him, grabbed him by the shoulder. David said it was like a dog that had grabbed a rat and was shaking it, and it was shaking David, and David was flopping around on the ground. And then the lion stopped moving and put his paw right on David's head, and David kind of moved out from under it and looked, and then boom, another shot. It was David's guide. He shot the lion again. The lion turned and charged after David's guide and attacked him and bit him by the leg and started shaking him. And then the rest of the men had finally caught up with their spears, and they all started throwing spears at it. Finally, the lion fell over dead, and David passed out. He woke up, and there was Mary taking care of him. It wasn't quite that dramatic, but he but Mary helped to nurse him back to health. And he asked her, Mary, my love, will you marry me? And she married him. And he took her up to the mission station because she helped him get, not really, he did marry her. It wasn't all because of her helping him with the lion. But they got married, they moved up and started a mission station further north. While they were there, they decided there was a desert, the Kalahari Desert, that no one had crossed and figured out a way across. But David did. He was so determined. He eventually even took his family with him and crossed this uncrossable desert, found the waterways of Africa, and came back. It was a big time. He was just doing his job, witnessing the people, taking the gospel to these villages, but he discovers a new waterway in Africa and ends up winning a gold medal for it. He comes back. Eventually, after almost 10 years of doing this, he sends his wife and kids back to Scotland because he's going to go on a long trip through Africa. And so he travels up, his wife and kids go get on a boat and go back to Scotland. He travels up through the middle of Africa and tries to get out to the coast. And when he's doing that, he discovers something that was absolutely heart-wrenchingly disappointing and heartbreaking to him. And that was the slave trade. Because there were Portuguese soldiers who would capture boys and girls and men and women, and they would chain them up by their feet and by their arms and put chains even sometimes on their heads, and they would haul them down to the ports to sell these people as slaves to other people. And this broke David's heart because he loved these people so much, and he knew that these people weren't meant to be in chains. And he had had so many friends that were like this. He had 27 men with him that were the type of men that they would capture and take into the slave trade. Anyway, he gets over to the coast finally, gets all the way up to where the ocean is, where there's boats. And there's a boat that's waiting that could take him back to London. And they say, Dr. Livingston, come back with us. And he says, no, I made a promise that I'd take care of these men, and so I'm going to take them back to their village. And he did. He took all 27 of them back, traveling through to their village, because he knew that if he left them alone in that port, that they would be sold as slaves. And he got back, and they were shocked that he made it back. He actually only made it back with 26 men because one of them found his own Mary and got married and settled down and had kids. So he took all 26 of those men back to their village, and the chief was so shocked that he was willing to give David 100 men the next time to go to the other side of Africa. And it was this time that he discovered what are called the Victoria Falls, and you'll have to look up a picture of those to see just how cool they are. He was the one who actually gave them the name the Victoria Falls. And what he found that was almost more exciting to him than that was the Zambezi River. The Zambezi River, he thought, could be the highway into the heart of Africa so that missionaries and people in the industries could get in there and help eradicate the slave trade and witness to the people. And so he traveled up to Zambezi all the way to the other side of Africa to see if he could find a way out. And he got all the way there. It looked like it was a great river for it, and he decided to travel back to England. And at this time, when he traveled back to England and met back with his family, he began to think that maybe God had something different for him than being the typical missionary. Because in all of this time he was traveling Africa, you know how many people he saw come to Jesus? Someone give a guess of a number. Just throw it out there. How many? Throw 10. How many other? 100. 7. 1. 1 chief came to Jesus in that whole time. He began to think that maybe the mission work like Mr. Moffat was doing, where he settled down in one spot, wasn't for him, and that God had something more for him. Because he had seen the slave trade, he had seen the need for an easier way for missionaries to get into Africa, he decided his responsibility was to open up Africa for those missionaries. So he joined up with the Royal Geographic Society. They funded his mission to go travel the Zambezi River, and they gave him a boat. They took that boat and they put it inside another boat and sent it on the ocean all the way down there to the river. Got the boat out, put it together. He's got this new shiny boat that he's going to travel down the river, and it's a terrible boat. This is the kind of boat that they're on the river traveling in the steamboat. You know, it's got the big steam wheel. This is going to be fast, and canoes are passing them one after another, and they're, oh my goodness, this is too slow. And then as they're traveling down this river, they end up finding that there was one spot that they had skipped when they were coming to the coast, and that spot had rapids. Not just minor, kind of gentle rapids that you go rafting on, rapids that were dangerous and would tear boats and canoes to shreds. He tried to take it by a canoe one time and lost everything that was in the canoes. Didn't work. Wasn't the kind of place that they were going to cross. So this whole river that he thought was going to open up the world to Africa didn't do it. He traveled back. Mary had been away from him. He had having a baby with her mom and dad in Kuruman. She traveled up to be with him. They got another boat. That boat didn't do so well. So he bought his own boat, put it together. And as he was putting that boat together, his beloved Mary died there in Africa. They had a couple of kids who were in school in Scotland, a couple of young kids with her parents in South Africa. And now he had lost his wife, his love. She was gone. And then he took this boat and went up further, up a little bit further north, and discovered even more of the slave trade. And this whole expedition, the whole expedition down the Zambezi, seemed like a total failure and a total loss. He came back to the coast with his new boat, the Lady Nyassa, and he decided he was going to go back to England again. And he didn't want that boat to be used by the slave traders, because he hated the slave trade so bad that what he did was something very crazy. He was in a riverboat. He had a crew of people who had never been on the ocean before. He had never navigated the ocean before. And he decided that he was going to take this boat, this riverboat, that he had used to travel on the rivers in Africa, to India. And so he gets out on the open ocean and sails all the way across the Indian Ocean to India to drop off this boat so that that boat would not be used by slave traders. And then he got on a boat. And then he traveled to England from there. He gets back. He gets funding for another task. People there that he was working for want him to find the source of the Nile. He travels back. The moment he gets back, some people betray him. They take his medical bag from him, and everyone thinks that he's dead. But he keeps traveling through Central Africa. They send a newspaper man to come find him, and he does. And he tells the story. He takes Livingston's journals back to the United States and gives a lot of traction to what was happening with the slave trade, letting a lot of people know about it. And David was getting older, he was getting sicker, he always had the fever, he had other sicknesses. And finally one day, one of his young guides who were with him walked into his tent, and there Mr. Livingston was, sitting, kneeling at his bed, and having been kneeling in prayer, dead. God had taken him there in his tent. Those men, so committed to Mr. Livingston, buried his heart and his organs there in Africa, embalmed him, wrapped him in a ship's sails, tarred the whole thing, and then carried his body 1,000 miles to the coast. They took them 8 months carrying Mr. Livingston's body to get all the way to the edge of the coast, and then it went on a Royal Navy ship and then went back to England for them to honor him with a burial there in England. Now, Livingston's life is not like other missionaries. He's a different type of missionary. Most of the other missionaries that we hear about and we learn about, They travel on the commerce and trade routes already established by other people. Mr. Livingston took it upon himself to open up the heart of Africa to the rest of the world. And because of what he did, he inspired missionaries to come after him. He inspired people to take action against the slave trade. He opened the door for people to enter Africa in ways they hadn't been before. He charted a huge portion of Africa that had not been mapped before. And God used this man who loved God, who loved the people God had made, and who loved the world that God had put them in, to have a huge impact on an entire continent. And that is the story of Dr. David Livingston.